time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It's Monday, January 25th, 2021. Hope your year is off to a great start. What I'm hearing from everybody, just hung up with another client call, volumes are remaining strong. In fact, some of the strongest locks on record that we're experiencing. So very excited about our new year and especially all that's going on. And so welcome to the podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Audio is king. Everyone wants to be able to listen so they can do it on a passive basis, get a lot of information in. Today's hot topic, I'm really excited about. Someone from where I grew up, Minnesota, is joining us, Doug Duncan. He has had so much success in the industry. He's Fannie Mae's Senior Vice President, Chief Economist, as well as doing a lot of research at the MBA. And joining me in this interview is a dear friend of mine and also a great friend of Doug's. And it's Jay Brinkman, retired Chief Economist from the MBA. So we're just going to have a great lineup. We're going to be talking about Fannie Mae's recently released economic forecast for housing as far as interest rates. Looking forward to that interview. So be sure to stay tuned all the way through to the hot topic segment. It's going to be really good. Informative as well as I think with Jay in the mix and those two going at it there, it'll be as entertaining as it is anything else. By the way, I put in the show notes today, go listen to Doug Duncan's interview on the Data Driven Real Estate Podcast. It's put on by Bruce Norris's son, Aaron. Did a great job of interviewing Doug Duncan. If you really want to get insights on what all goes into these projections and these forecasts, go listen to that podcast. I think Doug just did a fabulous job of really give you insight of how it's all about the data. It's not about an agenda. So we'll get into that a little bit later. I want to say we're thrilled to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out industrysyndicate.com as well as mortgagemedia.com. Please be a part of both of these media groups. Again, we're the old one. They all say you're the granddaddy, Dave. You started this before anyone else ever did it. Also, I just did a leadership mastermind podcast. It's Mitch Peek and Laura Brando interviewed me on the topic of leadership, and it's the three pillars in leadership and starts with your why. Go check that podcast out. We have a link to that in our show notes as well. Special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We say this all the time. By the way, we did have Mike Frattantoni on giving the MBA's projections in the first week of January. Be sure to go and listen to that podcast. Also, sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance, a great way to have your voice heard on the Hill. MBA does a great job of supporting us and our industry. Support them by joining up and getting your download of your own Mortgage Action Alliance app. So you can do it all from your phone. It's just amazing. Also, a special thank you to Finastra, third largest fintech company in the world. They have their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution and experience the power of a fully integrated approach to mortgage lending that simplifies the borrowing experience and streamlines the process for the employees. I had Dan Putney on January 11th. Go listen to that. We covered the survey that they recently did. It was a wonderful interview. A lot of information there. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. We are part of both of these co-ops, and it's a great way for you to meet with other lenders, your size, and it's the peer sharing of data. What each other experiencing is so important. I was just talking to Bobby Nicely of Alcova Mortgage, one of my clients this morning, and he says he's a part of the Mortgage Collaborative, and he says he's on with all the other CEOs, and so much information is shared what they're dealing with. So I encourage you to check out both of these co-ops. Also, Community Mortgage Lenders Association of America, as well as Indicom. I was giving their name out today. Great outsourcing company, partners with lenders and servicers in mortgage insurers and title insurance companies to provide one specific goal, help you grow your business. Go back and listen to the interview I did with Linda Beaumar in August 31st. Also, Incelerate helps lenders close more loans by engaging the borrowers more effectively. So go back and listen to the interview we did in August with Josh Friend, as well as Knowledge Coop and Moldability RE. When you're recruiting loan officers, you got to have real data, empirical data. Check out both these companies. They're actually a complement to each other. They're competitors in one sense, they're complement to each other. Check them out. We're recommending them all the time. As well as Velma, VendorSurf, Vidyard. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Check them all out on our website. Also, finally, a special thank you to Alice Alan, and Matt for their contributions to this podcast each and every week. I should also say Les Barker, as well as Rob Van Rapphorst, is where we're going next. Rob, good to have you here. What do you have for this week's MBA Mortgage Minute?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD issued a waiver allowing FHA to insure loans to borrowers with residency under the DACA program. The waiver removes language to the FHA handbook requiring lawful residency of a borrower for FHA mortgage insurance eligibility. MBA will work with industry and FHA representatives to ensure a smooth implementation of the waiver, including requesting additional guidance as necessary. MBA also looks forward to working with the Biden administration to make the policy permanent. Also, last week, Kathy Kraninger resigned as director of the CFPB. Dave Uejo, who has been at the CFPB since 2012, will serve as acting director. President Biden has nominated Rohit Chopra to be the next CFPB director, but Uejo will serve as acting director until Chopra is confirmed. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
I appreciate the MBA and the partnership with them. Go out and sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance while you're there. Also, download all the other data that's there. Become a member of the MBA. Well worth it. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les?
I feel good. I knew vaccine would now. So go to grow. Juice feels good.
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
By vaccinating those at risk of death and setting free low-risk people to work and play, global equities expect above-normal growth throughout 2021. The EU wants the U.S. to no longer be the world's reserve currency. Irresponsible fiscal policy and the nonsense of modern monetary theory, MMT, and the return of multilateralism weakens the dollar and threatens long-term global financial stability. Short-term, rates stay low, so go and grow with stimulus and vaccines, because we got juice. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Oh, I love that song. Brings back a lot of memories. Anyway, yes, check out tmspotlight.com, and when you're signing up for the newsletter, use the word power. And you'll get the paid version for free. Matt Graham could not be here with us, but he does have a segment of what's going on in the market, what we have looked forward to. So let's get over to what we can anticipate with interest rates, at least what will be driving them. Check out mbslive.net also. All right, here we go. Matt?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Last week, we talked about the possibility or the risk that rates had turned a corner in the bigger picture and that we might not have seen it as readily in the mortgage market because mortgage rates not really been paying as much attention to what was going on in treasuries. What was going on in treasuries was a slow, steady rise in yields going all the way back to the beginning of August. And that has been and continues to be a very linear uptrend that should be a concern for the mortgage market and would normally coincide with a similar slow and steady rise in rate. But because of the idiosyncrasies, shall we say, of 2020, mortgage rates were not only unable, but also unwilling to keep pace with that increase. In other words, rates were staying a lot lower than treasury yield suggested. The biggest reason for this was simply lender capacity. As treasury yields had fallen so far so fast that if mortgage lenders adjusted mortgage rates at a similar pace, they would not be able to handle the volume of inbound business. So they kept rates higher than they otherwise would have been. And that whole process was also complemented by significant outperformance in MBS during the same time as investors scrambled for yield in an increasingly record low yield environment. All that to say, mortgage rates had a great finish to 2020. Even as 10-year yields had been rising for five straight months. After that, and after the Georgia Senate election, when Treasury spiked more significantly, lender spreads had tightened up enough that mortgage rates paid attention to that rate spike in early 2021, and that raised fresh concerns that maybe all-time low rates were behind us, or maybe mortgage rates were finally getting on board with the uptrend. And those concerns stayed front and center for at least another week. This was 2 weeks ago. We did catch a break after a series of Treasury auctions, and then leading into last week, things started to calm down quite a bit. It was holiday shortened, no business on Monday, and economic data was generally light apart from several strong housing reports. We had NAHB's home builder confidence or housing market index coming in a little bit short of expectations, but still in historically high territory. Factor out the previous 3 months and that would still be a record high. Housing starts were stellar on Thursday, 1.669 million versus 1.56 million forecast. Building permits similarly strong. And then on Friday, existing home sales also quite strong, 6.76 million versus 6.55 forecast. And there too, among the several highest readings in roughly 15 years. So very strong housing data to round out 2020. In the week ahead, the current week, we have more housing data on tap with Case-Shiller prices and FHFA prices scheduled tomorrow. With us as always, weekly MBA applications on Wednesday. A big Fed announcement, not a big one, but the Fed is important. And they are releasing an announcement on Wednesday afternoon. Not expecting any fireworks, but traders will be tuned in for ongoing clues about, you know, potential tapering risks in the future. They've said they're not anywhere close, but eventually they're going to say something that makes traders second guess that, and the markets will react. Thursday, new home sales come out for December, expected to come in 1.9% higher after a little correction in the previous month. That'd be 865,000 units in terms of annual pace. And then the most forward-looking indicator for home sales would be pending sales on Friday, 10 a.m., and that's expected to hold fairly steady at levels that are not quite as high as they were in October, but still a whole lot higher than everybody expected coming into 2020. In terms of market activity so far this week, things have been strong. What we've seen after hitting the recent highs in Treasury yields is what we were hoping to see, several big block trades in the CME, and those are privately negotiated trades that take place outside the normal public auction channels in Treasury futures and options. And those big block trades can sort of speak to traders buying the dip or coming in and saying, okay, yields have gone high enough, prices have gone low enough, I think it's time for bonds to correct a little bit. Because the prevailing sentiment among traders is that rates are going to go higher as the economy recovers and as vaccines roll out, etc. And it's such an obvious trade that it makes sense for traders to look for opportunities to trade in the other direction, because that is not a crowded trade. You don't generally want to be in the super crowded trade. And sometimes that's why we see things happen counterintuitively when everything seems so obvious. So 1.075 was a level we wanted to break below last week. We didn't get it, but we're starting out the current week breaking below, and that is promising. A little bit of flush of momentum after that, although it was helped by some significant stock market weakness this morning. I think, you know, 1.075 will continue to be an important level unless we manage to stay above it for the entire week. Seems like that would be a little bit of a tall order, but we shall see. In terms of other economic data, the only other thing to watch this week would be Thursday's GDP, because it is the first look that we get at Q4 GDP, and it will sort of suggest what the overall damage to the economy was in 2020 from COVID. And it might not be any damage at all, depending on how that comes out. That's about it in terms of economic data. I think we're just hoping to see bonds continue to build a case for a short to medium term ceiling in rates up at 1.18-ish in terms of 10-year yields. Previous high on January 12th, 1.187. Last but not least, again, MBS are doing well after a little bit of underperformance 2 weeks ago. They started to tighten up last week, and they have a little bit more room to run in that regard. The story was mainly about supply, as 2-3 weeks ago, the spike in rates created a bunch of new MBS supplies, buyers and refiers got off the fence, and now that has subsided a bit. The supply-demand situation is even back out. Treasury issuance concerns are front and center with stimulus negotiations ongoing, and MBS have outperformed a bit. Not the case this morning, and it won't really ever be the case when treasuries are rallying in an aggressive way, but in a general sense, it seems like MBS have calmed down in terms of their underperformance, which bodes well for mortgage rate stability this week. And that'll do it for this week. But as a reminder, Lickin' On Lending listeners can get an MBS Live trial with double the free time and no credit card requirement by using the code LOL when they go to sign in. Just enter that in the purchase code section at mbslive.net. Double the free time. Back to you, Dave.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it so much. I appreciate you taking the time to get that in. I know you're a busy guy today. Anyway, check out the free offer or the extended offer for a period of time by going to, again, mbslive.net. Appreciate it very much. Alice Alvey is here. Alice is CMB, Vice President of Education Training at Union Home Mortgage. And she's one of the originals, has been here since the beginning of the podcast, and has been providing for over 10 years the legislative update. Alice, good to have you here.
Thanks, Dave. And I know everybody is excited to get to our special guest, so I will be quick. But, you know, at the beginning of each year, I always like to do a quick look at what were the bills that hit real quick onto the floor that the House submitted. And there's only three. So I was pleasantly surprised, because a lot of times there's a whole bunch of them as we get a new session of Congress started. And there are only three, and they're all repeats, really. They've all been submitted in the past. They have earlier version dates. So nothing new and dramatic within what's happening in Congress so far, which is always nice that someone isn't kind of jumping out there right away. Although my favorite, House Bill 34, Let Lenders Lend Act, did make it back onto the floor again as a proposal by Andy Briggs, a Republican out of Arizona. One sentence, repeal Reg C, the one that came out in 2015. Gotta love simplicity. Just get rid of it, right? So it's hum to season. And for those of you who are in the compliance world, thank you, because it's a thankless job. There was the 25 new fields that came about in 2018. And so this is a House bill to just scrap all that and go back to the way we were, right? I think Les needs to have that song, right? The way we were. So anyway, nothing exciting there, but I hope you all heard Rob say the fact that we now do have the ability to offer borrowers with a C-33 employment authorization code on their EAD, that those are our deferred action for childhood arrival borrowers, those with a DACA status, that we are now able to offer FHA financing. And that's effective now. So make sure that you're pulling together your marketing and communicating that well. There's still all the rules that go with a visa, so none of that goes away. And there's a lot of them, like how are we going to handle those that are already expired and they're in the queue to be renewed? How do you handle ones that are about to expire within the next year? So it's great that they're issuing new ones. That's really the big change. They were issuing renewals during this, what I call the gap period, over the last 4 years. Right. So it's exciting. I hope everyone picked up on that. And then last but not least, Dave, I got a great question by a new loan officer who was going, why are we having to get the 1003, the IRLA changed? They're like, you know, that's a really good question, because the idea of changing the IRLA and updating it has been in process, I think, since 2015. I was looking back at my notes when we first started talking about changes. Part of it was done for the demographic change information that wanted to be collected. Well, we've picked all that up. We know Fannie and Freddie and the other agencies want cleaner data, so it cleans up some of the fields that were a little less text and could be a little more freeform. And so it was difficult to really capture that data for analytics, because that's what we're all about. And that's kind of it. So we're going through a big change. Everybody's got HMDA reporting and IRLA changes all kind of colliding in February, but it should be pretty straightforward. So loan officers, heads up, you will need to change how you interview a borrower just because of the way the form laid out. Other than that, it's just a matter of managing your rules and your software. It shouldn't be a big change for the operations team as we're seeing that unfold. But we're here to help. Happy to talk about it on the show going forward. But those are my heads up for today, Dave. And oh, by the way, oops, almost forgot, the Federal Housing Finance Agency request for information on the appraisal related policies. You still have some time to get that out. That's not due until it's the end of February, February 26th. So I'll talk more about that on next week's show. But have a great day, everyone. Back to you, Dave.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it so much. So much great information there. But Alice, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. Say hi to Al and Bill and the team up there at Union Home Mortgage. Appreciate them lending you to us for an extended period of time to be here on the podcast. Appreciate it, Alice. Alan, good to have you here, friend. Alan Pollack.
Well, it's always good to be here.
With the weekly tech update, man. We're anticipating this being a really interesting year. Last week, you talked about the amount of consolidation that's happening in the tech sector. What you got for us this week?
Yeah, I agree, David. I think there's a lot of stuff going on, and I don't think anyone should be concerned. I don't think you should run for the hills, because acquisitions include the need to mature, expand, and have more customers. So you shouldn't worry about any of the technology solutions getting acquired if you have them. You should only worry about them going out of business. And I don't think that's going to happen with many of them, because everybody's been building such great features and functionality. It's more of a consolidation. Put the Legos together and build an awesome ship. So a couple things, David. The first one is, did you know, and this is sort of like a non-mortgage thing, there are 250 scientists that signed a petition to regulate trendy tech. What they're saying, Apple AirPods, which I bet you 80% of us on the phone wear them, the Bluetooth ones, most of the day. They're saying that close proximity of AirPods to the brain and inner ear may cause the risk of cancer. There's not enough information over enough time. But these 250 scientists is from over 40 countries, and they have signed a petition to the WHO and the UN. So again, don't pull them out. You may just want to switch over to the wired versions every once in a while just to make sure that you're not getting that magnetic field interference through the middle of your brain. Just maybe it makes you work faster. Maybe that's why I'm always feel like I'm on caffeine. Who knows? So yeah, David, great coffee mug I saw. It's actually a white mug with in giant letters. It shows a picture of a microphone with a circle and a line through it. And it says, you're on mute. And it's apparently selling like hotcakes. Companies are buying it for their employees. I pose a question that we're going to talk about next week before I get into the rest of today's segment. It's called, how does your company innovate? This was asked of me, and I spent a lot of time writing a small paragraph because it really is an interesting topic. So think about that. If you're a lender, how do you innovate? Is it through your vendors? Is it through your own departments and your own vision and aspirations? Or are you just trying to stay afloat? So think about that. How does your company innovate? And we'll be asking some folks about that. So on the news side, David, a couple of interesting things going on. Plaid has launched what they call FinRise. It's an incubator program. It's a 9-month program, help early stage companies get that feeling of entrepreneurship. But the unique part about it, it's only for founders that are Black, Indigenous, or people of color. And entrepreneurship should be accessible. This is something near and dear to my heart. I've got aspirations myself in these types of areas. So we'll talk more about it another time. But if you know anyone that is Black, Indigenous, or people of color, and you think that they would benefit from this program Plaid has. Think about it. Plaid has all these different connections and APIs and data and ways to get into the industry. Have them reach out to Plaid. Really important topic. You know, David, we talked about different roles of the organization and other things. You know, last week we talked about DevOps, right? And the fact that now you have CIOs and CTOs. Well, right now, something that's important is the CIO budget. And you can find all kind of articles online. A lot of them are non-mortgage specific. But the fact of the matter is everyone agrees that your technology, your CIO budgets will continue to rise. And of the folks that were interviewed in this one article I read, 92% of those respondents said that the pace of investment in data and AI continues and will continue to be higher and accelerate more than ever before. And of those companies, 65% of them already have what's called a CDO, a chief data officer. That's somebody that you want to consider having, especially if you have the budget for them. Mortgage is probably more important than ever because even though you're verifying, we've talked about DevOps, we've talked about vendor due diligence this year so far, you want to make sure, what are you doing with that data, right? Do you still have people sending stuff at home and they're printing out files and manually entering data? Do you have people downloading spreadsheets from CRM systems? You have databases that are shared. How are people accessing your data? Not only is it the security side, but also it's about how do you make better informed decisions and how do you react quicker to your business? If you think about our manufacturing flow, as data comes in, data is going to do something, help us make a decision and go somewhere and you can react and be better. That's it for today, David. I mentioned that on Lickin' on Lending, we're building a technology commuting. This segment is going to expand. What we just want to say is that if you are interested, please send us a message, alan@tms-advisors.com. How do you spend your tech dollars? And what has worked and not worked so far in the last 12 months? Did you get what you expected? Would you be interested in sharing your opinion? We'd love for the rest of our community to hear what you're doing. With that, David, I'm looking forward to some of our financial experts that are coming on the program, and have a great week, everyone.
That's really good. I remember Anthony Hsieh saying he has technology investment indigestion. It's so important. So looking forward to your wisdom as we look at what to bring on for technology, where the focus should be. Good job, Alan. Appreciate it. So this wraps up the weekly mortgage update. For those of you who are listening live, just stay right here. We're going to flow right into the hot topic segment. For those of you who are listening on a downloaded basis, just move on to the next podcast because it's going to be a good interview with Doug Duncan. And joining me on the microphone interviewing Doug will be Jay Brinkman. Two really great guys with a lot of knowledge. You're going to learn a lot. Let's go right into the hot topic. Welcome, everybody, to the Lickin' on Lending Hot Topic segment. Very excited about our guest today, Douglas G. Duncan, Dr. John Duncan. Doug is the Senior Vice President, Chief Economist with Fannie Mae. Has been there since April 2008, 12 years, 10 months, and there in the Washington, D.C. area. He lives in other parts. You know, he grew up in the same area I did of Minnesota. And you live in Minnesota long enough, you're going to go south somewhere. So he lives down in Florida. Also, he was Senior Vice President, Chief Economist for the MBA. He got his undergraduate degree from North Dakota State University. Yeah, sure, you betcha. And then went on to Texas A&M down to Jay Brinkman's country. Got his PhD there in agriculture economics. So, Doug, how in the world do you go from agriculture economics into complex world of mortgage economics? Good to have you with us, Doug.
Thanks. It's great to be with you. And if your employment option was sitting under the business end of a Holstein, you looked for other options.
So true. Joining me on this interview is Jay Brinkman, someone that we've had on here numerous times. Jay is retired chief economist for the Mortgage Bankers Association. Jay, thanks so much. I pulled this on Jay last night. I was listening to Doug Duncan's interview on the Data Driven Real Estate podcast, and then looking over his forecast he's about ready to get into. And I'm going, man, there's so much good information here. Who could I invite to come on here? And I called Jay last night. He graciously took my call and he goes, I would love to. Jay, good to have you on the podcast.
Well, looking forward to it. Thanks for inviting me.
It's an honor. And Doug, first, we're going to get into the Fannie Mae economic forecast and housing forecast in just a minute. But one of the things that cracked me up, when you and I are together, I always find myself laughing. Now, we have two economists there. You'll recall one other time, Doug, you joined Mark Fleming and I at a table. It's the Mirror Catalyst event. You came with your tray of food. We had all gotten our food. And Mark and I were sitting there talking, and you joined the table. And I said, oh, great. We're just going to learn that much more. I feel so blessed to sit with two economists. And your words were, do you remember what he says? It'll guarantee you at least three opinions. Having two economists at the table will guarantee you at least three opinions. I love that. I'm forever eternally grateful to you, because there was a period of time where I was on Fox Business and they said, Dave, we need you in the studio. Can you come in? So I was driving down to the studio. We'll tell you what the topic is when you're driving down there. And they said, Dave, you're going to be debating Leonard Bernstein. They're talking about the forgiveness mortgage debt or some percentage of it. And I'm going, I'm debating on national television or commenting about this. I'm supposed to be taking a contrarian view. And I was in a panic, folks, driving down there. And I just had these beads of sweat going up. How do I take that on? So I dialed Doug Duncan's phone and he said, Dave, Lenny's a great economist, a good guy. He's probably being under a little pressure to put out this binion. You remember what you shared with me, Doug, on that call? It was so good.
I have to admit, I don't.
It saved my life because I came on looking so smart. I had the silver bullet in my hand. And you said, how does that work with the basic tenet of a free market economy? And you nailed it. They were talking and they let him go first and they brought me on. Dave, what do you think about that? And I said, how do you reconcile that with, and I just shared what Doug said. It was one of those moments. Again, when you're sitting remote, you don't see the reactions of anyone around you. But I guess it was a great response that he gave, a great response. So I'm indebted to you, Doug, and I'm so grateful to have you here with us. I'm real interested in both the housing and the economic forecast. Let's start off with one of the favorite topics, and that's the GDP and where things are at. I'm really interested in what are the main drivers of change. Could you get into that, please?
Sure. Our theme for this year is the economy speeds up and housing downshifts, which doesn't mean housing's falling off. It's just not growing quite as fast as it did in 2020, which was a record-setting year, particularly in the mortgage space by any standards. Really, the driver today is not an economic variable. It's a health variable. It's all about the virus. And in 2020, it was learning about the virus itself. In 2021, it's going to be about whether or not the vaccines that have been developed can be distributed broadly, be demonstrated to be effective, and to be resilient. Because we saw in the December data on employment that people are still very concerned and policymakers are very concerned about the kinds of consumption that are discretionary spending. So what do I mean by that? Restaurants, sporting events, concerts, airplanes, hotels. In December, we lost 500,000 jobs in that space because of the resurgence of the virus in December alone. So until that is solved, we won't get that part of the service sector back with strength. In the housing space, there's a little bit of data that you might be interested in that we put up on our website. We do a consumer survey, 1,000 households a month. At the April board meeting, the Fannie Mae board asked, well, how far did I think house prices were going to fall? And I said, well, actually, I think they're going to rise. And they wanted an explanation of that. I said, well, as we survey consumers here early in the stages of the virus, dramatic impact on the economy, what we see is people who own a house and they could sell it and who are on average older than first-time buyers are more pessimistic than people who would be a buyer looking at where interest rates are. And while we think total sales will fall, we think supply will fall further then demand and therefore price will rise. And that's exactly what happened. So this is the next iteration of how people are thinking about the virus. We make the assumption that by mid-year, the vaccines will be widely distributed and be seen to be effective. So activity will pick up. And in the second half, we think growth could be at an annualized rate of over 6%. That's part of the reason your earlier speaker was talking about why Treasury yields have risen some, is the expectation of growth in the second half of the year.
On your data-driven real estate podcast, you made an interesting comment that a lot of the layoffs have been impacting the renter community, not necessarily the home ownership group. I thought that was a really interesting point, and that we're still going to have a lot of upward pressure on home price appreciation. So I thought that was interesting.
The workers that are in those categories of consumption, which are discretionary spending for middle and upper income households, are primarily hourly wage workers. And if you break out the leisure and hospitality category and look at the homeownership rate in that group, it's only 43%. Part of it is because a lot of those workers are younger and maybe not married, but it's not the homeowner population. That's the renter population. It's part of the reason why you're hearing the discussion about eviction moratoria and things like that.
Jay, jump in here. So good to have you here with us, Jay.
Well, I think one of the questions when I looked at Doug's forecast and looked at the MBA forecast was for refis for this year. Obviously, people will be coming in and taking some cash out, but largely rate dependency. And I have to say, I used to tell people that I would forecast refis just to show that I did, in fact, have a sense of humor, because it was so hard to actually come up with a number. And clearly, it's going to be rate-driven. And I think a fundamental question is, to what extent will the Fed continue to support through increases in its portfolio? Do you think the Fed's really going to step in and keep rates low, or are they going to step back and say, well, maybe the price for this is to let rates go up even more, and that'll really put the damper on the refi market?
Well, if you follow the arcane dot plot portion of the Fed's releases, where the different governors give their guesses on when the short-term rates will rise, you actually don't see that at present until 2023. And Powell has made a couple of statements very recently within the last 2 weeks saying that they're not anywhere near making a determination of allowing rates to rise anytime soon. They have two experiences, both of which occurred while he was on the Board of Governors, one of them before he was the chair. That's the taper tantrum of 2013. And at that time, Chairman Bernanke said that eventually we're going to stop adding to our portfolio. Just that statement raised mortgage rates 100 basis points over the next 6 months, and home sales fell about 10% from the current rate in the next spring. Then in 2018, when the Fed did change policy and start running off their portfolio and tightening, you saw rates rise again about 100 basis points, and you saw the housing data fall off again at the beginning of 2019. So the question is how impactful those two episodes are on the board's thinking, and there certainly hasn't been anything in their rhetoric that suggests they're preparing to turn directions on monetary policy anytime soon, particularly since they've said they would like to see inflation run above their target moderately for some time period, and they're certainly not seeing that yet.
One of the things you said on the data-driven real estate podcast, which again, we put a link in our show notes, folks, go listen to that. You said the three wheels of forecasting are this: if you give a number, don't give a date. If you give a date, don't give a number. If you get it right, don't look surprised. I love the humor there, but I'm thinking, looking at unemployment, the numbers now and on your forecast, and the most recent report showed a decline in jobs. Doesn't this signal a double dip recession?
Well, it certainly was a disappointing downturn, but as I pointed out, the decline in jobs was very much focused in those places where people consume by being in close proximity to large groups of other people. So very isolated, very much to the service, leisure, and hospitality sector. The other categories of employment, with the exception of education, where people are doing the remote learning, so that's led to some reduction in employment and education, and then in state and local workers, all the other categories that they reported actually increased in employment. And so our thought is, while that downturn will show weak first quarter growth, it doesn't foreshadow a double-dip recession, unless when the vaccines are out there, one of these new variants of the virus overrides the benefits of those vaccines, and we see a pullback by consumers on that front. That would be a risk, but we don't see that as the base.
Yeah, you're not seeing that scenario play out. One of the things you raised, and again, I just listened to the podcast again this morning, so I'm referring it back. One of the things you said is if there was a vaccine that came out today that just absolutely guarantee you take this vaccine, tomorrow you can start going out to restaurants, you can resume all your normal activity. But one of the things you noted was still 40% of Americans, at least this is back when you were talking in October, not sure whether there's been an update on the statistic, are still saying they're concerned or for whatever reason, hesitant about or not planning to take the vaccine. That attitude has got to be playing into this a bit.
Absolutely. The turnaround really depends on two things. The second one is herd immunity, whether or not there are benefits from broad segments of the population having been impacted by the virus. Even if they don't take the vaccine, if that immunity and the antibodies have some resilience, that could combine with the share that do get vaccinated and get us over the hump. It remains to be seen. There are still lots of things that are not known about the virus in its original incarnation, and now we have a couple of examples of mutations of that virus, which may enter the picture as well.
Yeah. Jay, jump in here, please. I'm looking over the economic report. Also, the listeners, for those of you that want to have me put questions to Doug, please text me at 512-632-2900. 512-632-2900. We'll do our best to get your questions on here. We already have some coming in. Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I think one of the issues going forward for mortgage lenders will be the regulatory environment that we'll see under the Biden administration. And I think there are going to be two central prongs. One is that it's apparent that they're going to try to achieve certain social policies through housing, whether that's additional rules on what is required in suburbs, what perhaps is required for larger developers, but also a microscopic view, looking at the new HMDD fields that will be available, what it's going to do in terms of really focusing in on lenders and just increasing lawsuits. I remember sitting with Justice Department in 2009, I guess it was, for the Obama people, and questioning on how they were going to be looking at servicing outcomes, how they're going to be treating differences in forbearance. And they simply told me, look, we're going to do whatever we need to do to support President Obama's housing policy. Whether or not we see a similar approach out of this administration, how then is that going to affect mortgage lenders going forward?
Well, I think no doubt we're moving from a less regulatory-focused environment to a more regulatory-focused environment. And there's an old saying that if you laid all the economists in the world end-to-end, they wouldn't reach a conclusion. I think one of the conclusions that you can get just about all the economists to agree to is that regulation increases costs. So if you, and I think it was Ronald Reagan that said, if you want less of something, make it cost more. And so I think that is something that will get factored into the mortgage arena over time, if indeed they do increase regulatory oversight. I think your point on social policy, I think they were pretty clear in the campaign that one of the things they will focus on is the difference in homeownership rates across different racial groups. So we would expect that there would be some focus on those things in the HMDA data that you referenced, and lenders would want to have a very good handle how their business practices result in the outcomes that are available for public scrutiny in their HMDA registers.
What about the stimulus package? How much of an impact is this going to have, if there is one?
One of the things to note is our macro forecast, which is for over 5% growth, the stronger part of that in the second half of 2021, and then still better than 3.5% growth in 2022, is without this $1.9 trillion proposed stimulus. And it's notable that the savings rate is 50% above the long-term average today. And with all the housing equity wealth and the stock market wealth that's been generated, consumers have got a lot of firepower. They just need to be confident that they're not going to get the disease when they go out there. Now, if you add that $1.9 trillion, it really depends on the structure of it. To the extent that it is a temporary program, you should expect a temporary response from the economy. So give you a couple of examples of that. Well, the Bush administration did a temporary payment to people There was no noticeable adjustment to GDP as a result of that. The Obama administration did the same thing. In the 2007 to 2009 time period, there was a temporary tax cut for first-time home buyers. You saw a spike when it was put in place, and then when it expired, you saw a drop right back to the same trend line. So temporary programs tend to generate temporary results. Parts which change of that stimulus program, which I haven't seen all of them, but if there are parts which change things structurally and permanently, those would be more likely to generate some sort of a more permanent response. But that's how we're going through the scenario analysis on the stimulus package. One of the risks is that with all the firepower that consumers already have, if demand grows faster than supply, you can get price inflation. And we do have in our forecast scenario some growth in inflationary expectations in the second half of 2022, which is when we have mortgage rates passing the 3% mark.
The third quarter, you have a GDP at 7.5 and a fourth quarter at 6.1, if I'm reading your information here. So that's interesting. I wanted to take a quick look at the manufacturing sector. How's the auto sector recovering? So Boeing and the likes of the aircraft.
The auto sector is actually doing quite well. The response to the virus in the auto sector was to stop manufacturing. So they didn't generate an excess supply that had to be worked off through discounts. And it rebounded pretty quickly because with interest rates essentially at zero to buy a car, the incentives were strong for people to replace aging vehicles. Well, the other thing that has happened is the number of passenger miles driven fell substantially, so people weren't wearing their vehicles out as fast. So the total level of production hasn't gotten back to where it was, but part of that's because the economics didn't mandate that. You also saw the insurance companies respond to the lower miles driven and the lower accidents as a result with rebates to consumers on their auto insurance. Boeing is a different and very interesting story. Boeing is one company in the United States that has the power in the manufacturing sector by itself to change the federal statistics. It's very impressive. If you look at aircraft production when the MAX 737 MAX scandal hit, big drop off in that, taking manufacturing numbers down, and then the virus put another leg down on that. It will be some time, I think, before people are comfortable going back to airplanes where all the middle seats are filled. So that's going to be a kind of a long climb back. It could be 2023, 24, maybe even beyond that before we see the full ramp up of the contributions of the aircraft manufacturing to U.S. GDP.
Very interesting. Jay, I'm reading over some of the text messages that are coming in. I want to shift the discussion over to housing. So, Jay, if you'd lead that off.
A question on housing is some of the regional recovery. I'm speaking here from South Texas. Things have been generally booming here, but you look at other areas of the country and still somewhat in decline because of their problems, perhaps long-term systemic issues. Doug, to what extent do you see kind of this big regional difference in whether it's demographic trends or economic recovery across the country?
Well, I was talking to someone recently that was pointing out some moving company data, a U-Haul, and they were comparing the price to rent a U-Haul truck from San Jose to Dallas to the price of renting a U-Haul truck from Dallas to San Jose, and it was about twice to get from San Jose to Dallas. That's a message about economics. It says that the place where affordable living and income growth is strongest and economic growth in general is strongest is going to be in those places which have more business-friendly environments, and housing is going to follow because housing follows jobs. So from a regional perspective, you have five states in the United States that don't have any state income tax, and they're all doing pretty well. Arguably, Las Vegas less well than the other four, Nevada being one of those states. The state of Washington doing well, state of Tennessee doing well, state of Texas doing well, state of Florida doing well. So from my perspective, it's going to be the general economy, the employment in that general economy, the people that are going there for that employment, and then they're going to have a place to live. And that's why how housing benefits. Now, there are pockets of things in other areas where you may see strength, but in general, those terms apply. We do think 2021 will be a stronger year in terms of total sales, both new and existing, than 2020, but not as strong as it could be were supply greater. And there again is where the vaccine comes in. If current homeowners become very confident that now it's all handled because the vaccines are successful, then you could see the supply of existing homes come up from that historic low where it is today.
Good. So, yeah, I encourage everyone to download both the housing forecast and the economic forecast from Fannie Mae's website. We'll put links to that in our show notes. Some questions that came in. This is the one that actually came in from Les Parker. And he says, have we ever had a precedent where we've had a former head of the Fed become the head of the Treasury? What are the potential impacts? Does this have any impact on the dollar or mortgage rates, do you think?
The first thing I have to say, given that the question came from Les Parker, is I think you should put on a video of him doing his thing to James Brown. That was impressive. I don't know of a precedent. I'm not as well schooled in history, perhaps, as I should be. I don't know a precedent where the chairman of the Federal Reserve became Treasury Secretary. Of course, the Federal Reserve was founded in 1913, so it's just over 100 years. I don't recall that. It's going to be interesting for housing because Chair Yellen, when she was chair of the Fed, focused on a couple of things related to housing. One was income distribution, and the other one was the racial and ethnic distribution of homeownership. So to the extent that those were on her mind as Fed chair, I would say in her role at Treasury, you would see her supporting initiatives of the administration that would be targeted toward those things.
Jay, you have any last questions you want to put to Doug as we wrap this up?
Doug, when you wake up in the morning and you look at everything going on in the economy and having to predict what's going on, do you ever ask yourself, what did I ever do to deserve this?
Absolutely. The company just put me in charge of corporate strategy. So I missed the boat. I didn't retire on time like you, Jay. So yeah, it's an environment where if you're forecasting in the past, you depended upon past variables, which were economic in nature and how they interacted to give some idea of things looking forward. Today, the virus is a health issue and it's fear that drives behavior, and it makes it very difficult to draw reasonable conclusions and make useful inferences for people in the business sector to help them make decisions. So it's challenging. I miss having you to bounce ideas off and tell me where I've gone off the rails, but I'm happy for you having your retirement.
Well, do you know the name of his boat, Doug? What do you put
I do
it
not.
About? Jay, you got to share that. It's hilarious.
The name of my boat is Where Yat. It's an homage to my New Orleans upbringing. A very
where
common expression there.
Yeah. Where Yat? Anyway, we know where we're at because we just had Doug Duncan as our guest. Doug, thank you so much for taking time to be here with us. It's just a delight. It's been great having you here, folks. Now, Doug Duncan, Senior Vice President, Chief Economist for Fannie Mae, has been responsible for the economic forecast, both housing as well as mortgage rates. Be sure to go to the Fannie Mae's website, download all the information that they have there. Vast number of resources. Jay, thank you so much for joining me on such short notice. I really appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Next week, we've got Scott Harris going to be here with Social Survey. Got an interesting thing that they're working on. You got to hear about this announcement. Scott will be talking about that for the Hot Topic segment next week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, as well as Indicom, as well as Incelerate, Mobility, RE, Modex, and all the other sponsors. Check them out on our website. Folks, have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.